Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of Irish Illustrated Insider. I'm Tim Priester with Tim O'Malley from Irish Illustrated, and we are joined, as usual, by Pete Sampson of The Athletic. Nothing breaking right at this moment as it relates to Notre Dame football, Notre Dame recruiting, but we are going to talk a little bit about some defensive ends and running backs because they seem to be at the forefront of a lot of the recruiting information that we have on Irish Illustrated. And man, if you look at that list of defensive ends that Notre Dame is pursuing, there's some awfully good ones in there.
This is a direct relation to a question later on. Those are the positions you have to pursue and when you are pursuing a playoff as well. And then some of the best news was to see Logan Thomas appear in a Tom Loy crystal ball. That's always a good sign. And then the next key is not only that crystal ball coming to fruition, but lasting for 8 months is the number one thing nowadays. But edge rusher, I feel Notre Dame suddenly got talent rich at running back, but you see how quickly that goes away with the transfer portal, with Logan Biggs leaving, whether you get an injury to Jadarian Price and Audric Estime, with a good year, we'll go pro. So running back is the other thing to pursue these days. But edge rusher is the premium. And it's interesting that they have the other premiums right now for this year: quarterback, cornerback, offensive tackle. Edge rusher is the other premium to put in there, along with defensive tackle.
Yeah, to me, defensive end and wide receiver, you got it. Like, those are two positions that in college football 2023, and really going back to 2018 and every year since, like, you got to have some real dudes at that position. You can't really scheme your way into an elite defensive end or a guy who wins one-on-one on the outside. If you can get a Cam Williams and an Elijah Rushing in the same class, that would be real significant. Like Logan Thomas, it's, you know, his ranking is good, don't get me wrong. But his offer list, if that is like legit, you know, there's always a grain of salt with that stuff. But, you know, when you see LSU and Oklahoma, Georgia on there, like, those are the recruiting battles Notre Dame doesn't really get into a whole lot, where it's like a crowded field of major powers. So that would be real significant if they come out on top in one of those.
Yeah, it looks like one Logan out, as in Logan Diggs, and possibly one Logan in Logan Thomas, who has had a crystal ball placed on him by Tom Loy, 24/7 Sports. You know, but you look at that list, and Thomas is a good one, but, you know, and you talk about holding on to recruits. If Elijah Rushing was committing, that would be a guy that you're going to say, man, it's going to be really hard to hold on to him over the course of 8 months. He's a great player. Notre Dame's still in the running for him. Bryce Young, of course, already in the fold. Cole Mullins already in the fold. Certainly Bryce Young is more of a strong side defensive end. Malachi Williams, I'm not sure off the top of my head what his offer list is, Pete, but I don't think it's nearly as impressive as some of these other guys, but he's a really good prospect. So defensive ends, Notre Dame needs them. They could use a couple probably for this upcoming season from that group. And then the running backs, you know, I think a lot of people are very impressed by Xavier Robinson's size, height and weight, you know, kind of in the Alabama type running back form, but I really love Ketson Young. I think he's outstanding. I think he, you know, at 5'10", 220, I said Kedron Young at 5'10", 220, he's a guy that carries his weight really, really well. And like you said, Tim, I mean, a running back room or any position room can look really good in a moment. In this day and age, that can change real quickly.
Yeah, and you mentioned his frame. until you're going first round and second, well, running back isn't first round draft pick. Until you're normally going first and second round draft pick, the frame is irrelevant. Kyren Williams broke the mold there. Logan Diggs is squatly built. Logan Diggs became much better at football when he put on 20 pounds of muscle and lower body strength. So yeah, I have watched more film because of Diggs and Williams on Young. And I like his style. I think it fits great with the modern game.
Yeah, it's just like when you're watching this tape, I mean, if you can run inside with some power, like I really don't need to see you get to the sideline, like on a jet sweep. No,
that's a good point.
Because like there's so many highlights of high school running backs where just like you're just running to the edge and like, yeah, that doesn't really apply in college.
Yeah, you almost ding him for it now. You're like, I'm looking to go just, outside.
Yeah,
it's well, like, I certainly dinged Logan Diggs coming out of high school. I dinged him for it a bunch. And then like Tim, I mean, he learned how to be a power runner, and a lot of that had to do with the weight that he gained.
Yeah, that's what I want to see. If you can do that in high school tape, you can run between the tackles and then make linebackers miss at the second level and then blow by a safety like on a kind of a vertical cut. Like that's the kind of stuff I want to see. But yeah, when we're talking about receivers and defensive ends, like I do have a difficult time like getting too invested in running back recruiting just because like the guys are so interchangeable now at that position. Like I do think it's a spot where like the difference between like the fifth running back and the 10th running back and the 15th running back and the 20th running back is more compressed than it would be a receiver or defensive end.
Yeah. And of course, Aeneas Williams is the running back that is already verbally committed in that class. And, you know, he's not quite built like Kendrick Young, of course. And so as they look at other prospects, you see Young and you see Robinson as bigger backs. I don't know that, you know, you talk about Young, like guys getting to the edge. He's really elusive. I don't know how blazing fast he is, but we said the same thing about Kyren Williams too. It's that elusiveness, the ability, the vision, the ability to create holes for yourself by using the offensive linemen as they set up a running back. I think Kendrick Young is a pretty unique talent. Again, not necessarily a blazer, but he does have that elusiveness and the slipperiness. I think at his height and his weight, I think it's hard for opposing defenses to know where do I hit this guy and how do I wrap him up exactly? Because you see him run through so many tackles and it's so slippery. Anyway, he's on my mind today. I'm doing a film review on him and a bunch of these running backs, obviously, Notre Dame's taking a look at, and we'll entertain those possibilities along with defensive ends and as Pete mentioned, the wide receivers. But I didn't want to go on to Tim. You wrote a story this past week that I don't know how many comments we got on it, but I think it's important that people understand the realities of early entry freshmen and freshmen that enter in June. As it turns out, over the course of the last 15 years, it doesn't overwhelmingly favor early entries for early playing time.
No, and I was able to use a good source on this, Tim. You and I interviewed him. Marcus Freeman was the guy that mentioned it. And it's ironic because we brought it up. We asked about Mickey because he had such a good spring. And he said, I don't know, Jaden Mickey had a great spring, but the most overrated thought is to play as a freshman, you got to enroll early. He used the caveat quarterback, obviously, is very important to come in early. And then I just went down the list. I mean, Jaden Mickey comes in early and Benjamin Morrison is the All-American that comes in late. Joe Alt, I know that's different because of an injury opened it up for him, but Joe Alt comes in. We could have had Joe Alt and Michael Mayer on this, or Joe Alt and Blake Fisher on this list, but Fisher was hurt and that's what gave Alt the spot. Michael Mayer, June. Kyle Hamilton, June. MTA, June. Julian Love, June. Josh Adams, June. Drew Tranquil was the first guy in before he got hurt, June. Jalen Smith, Kavari Russell, June, June, June. I mean, Aaron Lynch came in and starred in the spring, but Stephon Tuitt came in June and starred. You go down the list and there's just way more guys that come in June, and it's just because they can play. It doesn't have as much to do with anything else. It's those guys can play. I'm just surprised it's the last 4 years are like four guys trending as decade greats at Notre Dame came in June, four straight years. That's an incredible list of Morrison, Alt, Mayer, and Hamilton. I mean, you might as well, I should have stopped the story right there when you start going to pass those guys. But it's, I mean, with more half the guys coming in January now, you're going to see more guys on January pop in this list. But it's, yeah, as Pete's going to say here, quarterback, let's get a quarterback on this list and pop him in as a January entry and tell me my story's dumb.
Yeah, that's everything else. I agree with it, and he's right, I guess. It just early entry is very overrated. It's not that it doesn't benefit the player. It definitely does. Like if you get in a college weight room, I mean, I think we've seen some players benefit who have come in and been injured, where then they get a college rehab program, opposed to high school. But I do think like the, I mean, we all want to see what the early enrollees look like the first day of spring practice and Rico Flores and Braylon James and Jaden Greathouse. Yeah, you want to check those guys out. I totally get it. But just in terms of, I think, the long haul with these guys, it's the facts are the facts. And if you are a elite athlete, you will play. And if you're not, showing up in January is not going to change that.
Yeah, I don't want the conclusion to be that guys coming in early, it doesn't benefit them. That's not the point.
No.
Of course it does. And we know that Tobias Merriweather was one that I think kind of felt like, man, I really could have benefited last year by being here in the spring, because he did have some playbook issues that he dealt with in August and as the season progressed. And just to clarify, if anyone is listening to this and speaks to one of our competitors, our conversation with Marcus Freeman, Tim is referring to last summer. We have not.
Yeah, I put it in the story. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, but you didn't say it right now, and I just wanted to clarify it that we expect to have an interview with Marcus Freeman coming up here this summer, along with the rest of our competitors. And to end segment one, speaking of which, we are still anticipating. I know I've said this, but there's only so much we can do about it. We are still anticipating an interview with Jack Swarbrick. He's been busy. He's been on the road, but we have a lot of questions about NBC and apparel and NIL. And we've talked about this on podcasts. We can speculate about who's going to be Notre Dame's apparel supplier. We did that last week. So, I mean, rather than go into that again without any real basis for what direction Notre Dame is heading, we are still anticipating an interview with Jack Swarbrick coming up soon. And of course, when we conduct that interview, all of these questions that people have about where Notre Dame is progressing with the Goog, et cetera, all those things, that will be on the list of questions for Jack Swarbrick. We'll be back. Segment two coming up, burning up the boards.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Segment two, burning up the boards. Our first question is from Maltese Irish and probably could have come in a few days prior. Or we could have noticed it a few days prior. Are there any portal running backs that Notre Dame is kicking the tires on? Pete Sampson.
Yeah, a name that I had heard a couple weeks ago was a West Virginia transfer running back, Tony Mathis, who, you know, would have a connection to Jared Parker from their time there. He actually is headed to Houston from West Virginia. But I think it was somebody Notre Dame at least kicked the tires on a little bit. King DeRue from Purdue was somebody Notre Dame actually offered out of high school. And I think he committed to Cal over the weekend. But point being, like, they're looking, but you're certainly not going to find like a like for like replacement for Logan Diggs. But could you find a guy that helps round out the depth chart in case you know, Jadarian Price isn't totally ready to go, or, you know, Jabron Payne has had a history of injuries. You know, he's like, running backs get dinged up, right? So beyond Audric Estime, Payne, Price, Jeremiah Love's just getting here. All those guys have sort of like an if attached to them. But if you can get a grad transfer who's maybe been healthy, or at least somewhat reliable, then, you know, I would understand kicking the tires on that, because you're under the 85 man limit anyway.
And of course, you also have options with Chris Tyree. I would imagine at some point along the way, we're going to see him lined up as a traditional running back. Now, everybody is waiting to hear more on Jadarian Price. I had heard that in the spring they were still a little bit hesitant for him to make some cuts, and that perhaps by the end of the spring they were hoping that he would be at that level. So I just think it's something to keep an eye on. Anytime you're dealing with an Achilles, you don't want to take anything for granted. It's a lousy injury to suffer, and the recovery from it is, it's just longer. You know, there was a time when the torn ACL, you were looking closer to a year, and that has, you know, that's shrunk a little bit through the years, but I'm not sure that they're quite there with Achilles. So we'll keep an eye on that. But I would imagine that Chris Tyree is still, when you lose a guy of the caliber of Logan Diggs, even with a completely healthy Jadarian Price, that's, you know, I mean, it's still an inexperienced player compared to what Logan Diggs did last year. So
we argued for 12 pages about the loss of Tyler Buchner and what it could mean. I don't know why there was any argument about the loss of what Logan Diggs meant. The only thing you could argue back was, well, he was going to leave, so go ahead and leave. And I agree with that part of it, but it was still a loss. It was still an absolute loss. And people just thinking Jadarian Price is automatically better than Logan Diggs was coming off a ruptured Achilles. He might have automatically been better than Logan Diggs if he never got hurt last year, when we heard Jadarian Price is outstanding and Logan Diggs was coming back from a shoulder injury, but things changed in that year.
I think there's a tendency, Tim, that when a player leaves, it angers some fans. And so they, you know, they want to quickly say, oh, it doesn't matter, Notre Dame has this. It does matter. Logan Diggs is a good football player, was never fully invested being at Notre Dame and content being at Notre Dame. But the fact is,
just think how good he was only being partially invested.
But that's why it's okay he left, because he was going to leave. Other than that, it wasn't really okay that he left.
Ended up being a pretty darn good running back at Notre Dame in 2022, and now Brian Kelly will benefit from that. Question from Bill V6118. It feels like Notre Dame is an injury away from big problems at several position groups. Assuming QB is number one, what are the next three groups that you can least afford to lose a starter, or even a 1B or 2?
I don't know if they're big problems away in several position groups, but is running back one now?
Well, you don't want to lose Estime.
I think that would be a huge deal now, where it wouldn't have been a huge deal a month ago.
Yeah. Got to keep him healthy.
Yeah, no, that would be one. I mean, you know, like, Notre Dame always has these, right? Like, there's always, you know, logically speaking, there's always got to be a position that has the least amount of depth.
Sure.
But in running back now, you feel like that's your one injury away from being in trouble. If Xavier Watts got hurt, you would be back to where you were before you took Antonio Smith. So that position, I think, would probably still rank higher than running back to me. Because it's like, you can sort of cheat at running back by playing 11 personnel. Like, there's no playing one safety. That just doesn't work. So it's pretty hard to hide that. I don't know. I mean, is there another position that jumps out to you guys where, like, man, they're no, razor thin?
Jordan Battelle, if Jordan Battelle, who clearly is the best pass rusher of the Vipers, is injured, I look at Tu Alamaka. We actually have a question on that coming up. I mean, from Donnelly 3434. I mean, I look at Tu Alamaka as more of a run stopper right now than a pure pass rusher. I know that he's shown some stuff on the practice field coming off the edge, but we don't know where Josh Burnham is. And so I would say that. And I really don't. Boy, we have a pretty good idea who the starting five offensive linemen are, but if there is an injury, who's the next guy in? I don't know that there's a, you know, where
no, but that's got to be every team though, right? If you lose Joe Alt, yeah, your backup's not close to Joe.
Well, right. And if your backup is Tosh Baker, like, I realize his career is not like taken off like his recruiting ranking, but like he's still what, 6'8" and 300 pounds, like, yeah, that I nobody's gonna cry poor for Notre's backup offensive line.
Well, I know, but Michael Carmody's 280, so
yeah,
is he a viable option on the offensive line?
Robert, I don't think he's
probably not right now.
Spindler's shown, yeah, very little up to this point. Is he really a viable option if you lose one of those guys? As we look at these positions, I Viper comes to mind for me first after, well, an estimate. You can't lose. And, you know, I just want to say that in the portal area, let's not be foolish about this. There are teams all across the country that face the exact same situation. I know there's a lot of players in the portal, but just to grab bodies that aren't really going to upgrade you.
Yeah.
Doesn't.
Back to the offensive line, I think if you offered most people top 100 developed it last year under Harry Heaston, Tosh Baker, top 100, has had three position coaches, but looks better than he used to, Rocco Spindler and Ashton Craig, a guy that the staff really likes, they would probably take that as their backup.
Pat Coogan should be mentioned.
Pat Coogan as your back. That's a pretty good backup quartet. And Emil Wagner, I know he's too small right now.
Yeah. But I think that they're, yeah, I feel like we've had some discussions about, ooh, the number two offensive line is like, it's never a strength because those guys would be starters if they were, but this seems like a better group of backup offensive linemen than maybe Notre Dame typically has had.
Yeah, I would think the thing is about offensive line, they never get any playing time. They don't get backup.
No, yeah, they sure don't.
It's not like D line that goes three deep. They won't do that on the offensive line. So when you do have an injury or a graduation, you have to insert a guy that hasn't really played any meaningful, yeah, snaps. I mean, I, you know, Coogan looks like a guy that can definitely help them. We thought that about Carmody. Now he's 280. We feel that way about Ashton Craig. You know, we'll see, but, it's more difficult than ever to have the depth that you want because, I mean, look at quarterback. It's so difficult now to have more than three quarterbacks. And I realize generally you don't need more than three over the course of a season, but it's just very difficult with roster management now to have the depth. That's why you have to recruit 12 months a year. You have to tend to your roster 365 days a year because things can change overnight.
You have to tend to other people's rosters 365 days a year too.
Right.
Next question, ND1 Cubs 1. The current roster is A, built for a playoff appearance this year, B, building towards a playoff appearance next year, or C, needs to dramatically improve the talent in the room if they hope to make the playoffs anytime soon. Before we all start answering, I want to make sure we point out he said playoff appearance, not win a championship.
Right, and the playoffs expand in 2024 to 12 teams, so that's completely different. I believe the question Tim was asked, built for a playoff appearance this year, next year, is building towards a playoff appearance in, oh, okay, I see the crossover there. Anyway, I don't know that they're built for a playoff appearance this year. They are a quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
And again, playoffs are about to expand, so it's a different kind of, it's a different animal at that point.
Yeah, I think you just answered the question as if the playoffs were not expanding. Otherwise, the question kind of,
right,
falls apart a little bit.
Okay.
Do it.
All right. Let's just go through the positions. Quarterback.
Yes.
Now.
Right. Offensive line now.
Now, I agree.
Running back now.
Yeah.
It's not better next year. He's gone next year. There's no chance. No running back should come back with 2,000 yard seasons that they would advise him to leave. Cornerback now.
Yeah, I agree.
Those are the nows for sure.
I don't think there are any other nows.
There are any other nows. We all think the linebackers with the three guys and the three young guys is undervalued, but I wouldn't say they're built for a playoff appearance because of the linebackers. But if all those guys, we say offensive line, running back, cornerback, quarterback, play at the playoff level, I think linebackers can supplement that.
Yeah, because out. I think, yeah, I'd like to think that Leafau, especially if they move him outside, will, you know, I just think sometimes we're a little unfair to Leafau. He's been a starter 1 year.
I think we're fair to his year, not to his future for this year.
I agree with that. Okay. I agree. There are even people in the business that think that he has no chance of developing, and I'm just not in that. That's just not my mindset with him. Anyway, my point was about the linebackers that I think we look at Snead and Ziegler as pretty interchangeable. Certainly Snead, because he's played a little bit, but I think Ziegler too is a guy that that's going to be game ready when that time comes for him.
But then you don't think of safeties as playoff level, but you don't think of safeties as playoff level next year either. So it's still better this year. That's the question. It is. Yeah. It's just comparing the years. It's way better this year than it will be next year.
Yeah, it's like, is defensive line going to be better a year from now?
No. It will not be, although everybody could come back, basically.
Yeah, I was going to say, who's leaving?
That's to say, yeah. Botello and Mills leave. Because
seems like makes a sense.
Decent chance that would happen.
Where are they going?
I don't know. Where did Brandon Joseph go?
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's
where did Justin Adamolola go? Like,
I think they are built for a playoff appearance this year. Number one, next year less than the future, because their quarterback will again be a portal guy or Kenny Minchie or CJ Carr next year.
Yep. I feel like I feel like this year's roster is going to be better than next year's roster.
I agree. With Sam Hartman makes a big deal. And yeah. Well, now Benjamin Morrison can't leave, but Joe Alt can. Audric Estime should.
Blake Fisher can.
Zeke Correll could decide 5 years is enough.
Yeah, boy, it's so hard to like, it's really hard to speculate on a Blake Fisher right now.
It's not on Joe Alt though, and Sam Hart.
No. Yeah. Joe Alt's that's a given. He's already projected as top offensive tackle in the draft, but Blake Fisher has, he's only.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either, but he can still do it.
No, he can. And Zeke Correll, I just think that I have a difficult time saying what you guys are saying in terms of roster, like all of those defensive linemen.
Don't you think Sam Hartman and Joe Alt maybe are more important with the current defensive line and linebackers than next year's team?
Hartman and Alt are the outliers of who we're talking about here.
Estime, yes. Yep. I would go this year, then I would go the distant future, then I would go next year. I think CJ Carr or Kenny Minchie is going to be better in a couple years than he is next year, and that might be the most important question.
Yeah, I mean, I could see next year feeling like a bit of a bridge to 25.
Yeah.
I can feel like next year feeling way different than we anticipate.
There's 100% that will be the case, but it might even be like more obvious that it's a bridge to 25. Right. You know what I mean? Like, who knows? We're going to feel about Jaden Greathouse and Rico Flores a year from now. Like, do they both look like Benjamin Morrison? Because then you're like, well, holy crap, wait a minute.
Portal quarterbacks lining up to come here.
Yeah. Audric Estime is like, you know what? I want to come back for my senior year. I'm like, well, okay.
It's always been hard to predict an upcoming season. It's harder than ever to predict the season after and the season after that. Question, I'll just go ahead and throw this out to you guys because I answered from Donnelly 3434. Compare and contrast the Vipers and what to expect from each this season. Jordan Botello, Junior Tuialamaka, and Josh Burnham.
I think you made a good point that we have trouble really envisioning Tuialamaka and Burnham out there. From reports, Tim, good point. Tuialamaka, I think, will set the edge and be able to move out there. Better pass rushing acumen than we knew about until he was in camp last year. And then Burnham, the whole thing is I have heard that he can be that Jack Lamb type in the dime defense that's so long and can move, but can he rush the passer and can he set the edge? Those are what the Viper needs to do. So maybe Burnham's a guy that helps you when he's dropping more than when he's rushing this year, which might be okay as the third.
Tell me the best that you've seen of Josh Burnham. Give me a moment in practice that you saw where you thought,
I don't have one.
Okay. And I'm not saying that they aren't there. I'm saying what I always say is I haven't seen it per se. How about you, Tim?
I agree. And we did see it with Tui Halamaka several times.
Fair enough.
Yes, 100%.
All right, here's one. We have a new CMU Pens fan for a while. We are back to him today. And the question is, what we really haven't. But he always submits a question, so he's got a shot every week. But what has a better chance of happening this season? Notre Dame has a 1,000-yard receiver or Notre Dame having a defender with double-digit sacks?
Well, 1,000-yard defender. 1,000-yard receiver.
Yeah.
1,000-yard defender sacks would be a terrible year.
Yeah. Double-digit sacks is – that's hard to do when you have Isaiah Foskey.
There's only one realistic option, and it's not all that incredibly realistic. He gets to 10. Who else is getting 10 sacks on the team besides Botello?
Well, I mean, maybe Jean-Baptiste, but I don't know. And I don't know who's your 1,000-yard. I mean, I think
Sam Hartman throwing for 3,500 yards.
And Jaden Thomas, I think, would be the leading candidate to be that guy just because he's become such a much better player. His versatility, they're going to move him inside. They're going to move him in the slot. He knows how to use his size and strength now. Chancey Stuckey talked about convincing him how to use his speed and quickness because he has that. And I think that Thomas is trending in that direction. But 1,000 yards, I guess with Sam Hartman, it's certainly possible.
And Tobias Merriweather,
Jaden Greyhouse just replicates the blue gold game. Six times.
Week nine.
You're gonna have, but if you're averaging, 10 yards a catch, you're gonna have to.
I am going on record as Greathouse is going to be a better downfield receiver than he has been credited for to date on this podcast. Jaden Greathouse.
You can give me 120 yards receiving, and I don't care how you get it. Like,
I know, but it would, but like,
it's actually more valuable how he got it because he produced nine first downs.
It's like an extension of the running game. This guy.
It's just he's going to need 95 receptions to get at least in a blue goal game. And Tim, your point taken that I think he's shown. We saw a lot of high school film where he's really, really dangerous downfield, and they didn't use him that way in a blue goal game. That's not his.
I think the receivers are going to have 850 yards, 725 yards, things like that. But there's no Michael Mayer, so they can have a 1,000-yard receiver.
And there's no Logan Diggs. So yeah, I don't like game. Logan Diggs was the best pass catching running back that they had. So you take him out and you take Mayer out. Hartman is going to push the ball to those receivers. Like,
a 1,000-yard receiver, I think, is much, much more likely than a 10 sack guy.
I don't disagree with that. I think the ball is going, I think we saw a glimpse of what Sam Hartman can do in the blue gold game. I think it was that first scoring drive where he hit five different receivers, including Salerno. And I think Salerno's a guy that's, I don't know what number I threw out before. I always throw out a number that's absurdly high, but I think he's in the dozen to 15 reception category just because Hartman will find him. Opposing teams will not be paying a whole lot of attention to Salerno and looking at the other guys. Yes, Tim.
I want to bring this up because we got to give CMU Pens fan credit. We will now have a Monday musing prediction today after reading this. I will say three receivers go over 700 yards instead of a 1,000-yard receiver because I think Priester's right. They're going to spread it around. If you think that's too much, that 2018 with Ian Book and Brian Kelly running, Boykin 872, Claypool 689, and Fink 571. I think Sam Hartman with Claypool, Fink, and Boykin would have gotten over 700, 700, and 700.
One of those guys up, yeah.
I think it's just for the sake of realism here, there were 31 1,000-yard receivers last year. And I don't think that most Notre Dame fans could name most of them. If I just read the list, you'd be like, who? But A.T. Perry at Wake Forest was one of them. So that's perhaps a little bit notable.
The offense would have to change so much for them. Like there were Arizona and Ohio State had two each. You could definitely name Ohio State's, but I just like the offense is not set to
throw the ball at probably enough to create a 1,000-yard receiver.
I just think there's also a few good receivers. That's my best way of saying it.
Yeah.
For the record, number of players with double-digit sacks last season? 14.
Yeah, so twice as likely you're going to have a 1,000-yard receiver versus a double-digit sack person.
There you go.
Next question.
Like Zay Flowers, first-round pick. He had 1,077 yards.
Yeah, there you go. And he seemed like he... That's because Notre Dame held him down.
Yeah. Zero catches, 0 yards, I think. Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember.
He had 1,300 had he not come here. Yeah. Got locked down. That's a good point. They really locked him down.
All right, we got a couple questions. You want to put those together, Tim?
Sure. The first is from M. Lindberg. Notre Dame currently has a tough time getting undergrad transfers in the door. Does this increase the number of players it should recruit out of high school each year, knowing that attrition within the roster will take care of the rest? And from JEF44, with the emergence of the portal, is Notre Dame more likely to take shots at the high upside risky high school recruits?
It's 56 visits, right? You're allowed per year. Is that the number?
I think that sounds right to me.
I mean, I don't know how many they recruit a lot of guys, man. I don't know how many more that you recruit.
Take, maybe he means recruit. He might mean take.
Yeah. I interpreted the question as like, if you looked over the next 5 years, you would see a higher average of signees than you did in the previous 5 years, and certainly in the previous 5 years before that. And I think that's spot on. I think we're going to see consistent 25 man classes from Notre Dame
with an effort at 28 or 29.
Yeah. Like I'm going back and thinking like, was it the 2012 class? They signed 17 guys in 2012. Like that is never, ever going to happen again. Never. So
yeah, and they have 16 verbal commitments already. So clearly this number is going to rise. And with regard to high upside risky high school recruits, Tim, you brought up something about 1 year scholarships.
Yeah.
First of all, Notre Dame does care about their graduation rate, which is going to be very difficult for them to maintain this because guys leave so readily. You're going to have to put a different framework on how you evaluate your graduation when guys are leaving after 2 years, which is happening a lot because you haven't established yourself as a player yet. So graduate, I mean, I don't know how many more risky recruits they'll go after because graduation rate is still important, but it's something to consider as far as a one year deal.
I like the if you're building a roster without total regard for your graduation rates, you absolutely do what this question asks. Get some risky recruits because you can fill in those spots with decent portal players that are graduate transfers and or freshmen that can transfer their credits. However, that is not the reality. The Notre Dame is not going to care about its graduation rates, which is why each December, when you hear through back channels, this guy, 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 we're not asked back. They are junior, 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 because they can graduate soon, not be held against Notre Dame's scholarship numbers and not be held against Notre Dame's graduation rate. You're not often going to hear these four freshmen didn't make it. There's usually one a year where you kind of say, hey, he's not going to play at Notre Dame. So the graduation rate fight for Notre Dame is, every December, when they have to clean out some of their roster to bring in better players, they're going to have to keep looking at the junior class. The guys that are becoming juniors, not becoming seniors, that's easy. The guys that are becoming juniors as sophomores that they can stay at school for 1 year, graduate, go play football somewhere else, and not be on the roster. It is harder for Notre Dame to maintain graduation rates in this era than anyone could have expected. Even, I think, Notre Dame looking ahead probably was like, whoa, what's going to happen here when we have to purge our roster?
What's the risk here? Or is the risky part here the kid is not an academic fit or a character fit? Or is the risky part like, well, we think he's an okay player, but we know he's a high academic kid and like essentially will be a good roster player for us, like a low ceiling, high floor type of player. Like, I wonder if like the extra player Notre Dame takes here is like, who's our favorite Stanford commit? We'll take him. That kind of maneuver, yeah, opposed to taking like Johnny Williams was a high risk player.
I think it's more that I don't know for sure, but I think that JEF 44 is asking more in terms of, you know, risky fit, risky chemistry with Notre Dame, whether that's academic, whether that's.
Well, I think maybe good example, like William Noah Boykin, if he was a better player too, you're like, you just got to go after the guy, even though Tim and Pete, when he came to Notre Dame, you're like, this is going to be tough. This is not, he's not going to be here a long time. I don't know. I think usually risky for fans certainly means upside player, not low floor player. That's not that risky for fans. Low floor, coaches like low floor, not a whole lot of recruiting mavens like low floor. And no upside.
Like, I guess like Armel Mukum, they just took Stanford's best commitment, and like he has a chance to be a good player, mm-hmm. but like, you know, he's not Elijah Rushing. But I think that's somebody that you would want to just, that's somebody you would always want to have in your program, right?
Yeah.
And so like if those kinds of players are more like, I know Freeman's one of his points earlier for recruiting is like, I want to find a dude and then I'll figure out if he can make it at Notre Dame as a student later. I wonder if you sort of flip that back around, like let's find an extra two guys that we know are going to be great fits at Notre Dame as a sort of a student athlete. And we see some upside as a player.
Notre Dame has always gone after the diamond in the rough. I saw someone, I think I mentioned this in Thursday Thoughts. Someone said Notre Dame should be beyond diamonds in the rough. Notre Dame will never be beyond diamonds in the rough. That's what
it's a high matter of how many you have.
Right. But to think that you're beyond that, that's just, you don't have a very good grasp of the Notre Dame football, where it's come from and where it is. I mean, I realize they're trying to upgrade the talent level, but first of all, how many programs don't have diamonds in the rough? Let's be realistic about this.
A couple,
right?
Yeah, they both wear red.
Well, yeah.
Well, the quarterback was not much of a guy in that red jersey either.
Did you see they just got a commitment from the number one overall player in the country?
But they didn't win the title with him. You know, I think everybody has it. I'm trying to think of their, I guess I it's think, different well, now. I'm trying to think of 17 there, like, linebackers. If a
diamond in the rough beats out your four-star or five-star, like that may be unpopular in message boards, but that means that guy is actually freaking good.
Ian Book beat out a 36th ranked quarterback in the country.
Yeah. Well,
there's
and somebody else.
60-ish power five programs. You have to recruit diamonds in the rough. I mean,
yeah, 65 times 25. Can anyone do the math on that before I open the calculator app?
Hit it.
Hey, when we were on the numbers, by the way, Notre Dame did have 8 decommits in this. That's past
1,600
cycle.
Players.
1,600 players, yeah. Unless you're going to expand 4-star recruits to the top, you know, 1,000 players. I realize Notre Dame.
Jacob Matuska was a 4-star recruit. Remember that?
Who's that?
Yeah, I thought there already were 1,600 four-star players. Matuska was a 4-star
recruit. Everybody gets to be a 4-star recruit. You're a 4-star.
Yeah.
I do agree. The first part of that question, though, is crucial. I think Notre Dame will recruit, Tim. I mean, like, take more players every class, like Pete said.
I agree with that. I agree. And they're going to come in and out the door at a faster pace than ever before. So you have to do that. So to the question, point taken. Question from Sean_McCarthy4. It appears Notre Dame is addressing concerns about the safety position, as you have alluded to via the transfer portal. Do you think Notre Dame will find a defensive tackle, or do you think they're finished with this cycle?
I think they're finished. I would always take one, although we've talked about this in the last one. Pete, you were mentioning you would not take the Chris Smith equivalent this year, right?
I wouldn't.
Okay. Then I don't think Notre Dame could take somebody in the transfer portal at this point. Aiden Kanai might be the guy that they kept out of the transfer portal and is on the team.
Yeah. I mean, if they found a running back, I think there's running backs aplenty in there. You know, if you find someone who can help you out.
No, he's saying great. Defensive. I'm saying defensive tackle only.
Oh, yeah. If I guess we're just talking defensive tackle, then sorry, I was branching out to everything. No, I would just sort of roll with what I had at defensive tackle.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, we talked about Braden Fisk, and he would have been a great fit. And I think he would have been, I think he would have been a potential starter, frankly. But, you know, do you want to transfer a defensive tackle transfer in the portal, or do you want to see Tyson Ford and Jason Anye? I mean, you know, a few months ago we would have Jason Anye, but Jason Anye showed big time in the spring. So do you want?
I want to see Jason Anye for sure. If Ford, I'd love to see Tyson Ford emerge to be almost as good as some of those guys, but I don't know that the 22-year-old defensive tackle that's played 30 games of football might not be more valuable to your roster.
Sure. I mean, I can't deny that, but I mean, it's an either or situation. And if Tyson Ford is part of the third wave of defensive linemen to come in, I think I'd rather see him.
I don't want to lose Tyson Ford or a Tyson Ford like young player to the guy I just said, the Chris Smith player.
Right. And then, yeah, I think, don't you? I mean, you sort of owe it to yourself to figure out what you have in Tyson Ford on a game day, right? Yeah,
that's what I'm trying to say. In this, not in every case, but as it relates to Tyson Ford, but mainly Jason Anya, because he really flashed in the spring. And then you have Devin Houston and Brandon Vernon. I know they're true freshmen. Houston didn't benefit from being an early enrollee, at least in terms of football activity on the field. And I don't know if Vernon is going to have the size to be a three technique, or if they bump him to strong side end. I don't know, but you know, I get the question. If there's a guy there, yeah, take him. But you just getting a body, I don't think in this instance is a better alternative.
I agree.
To Ford and especially Anya, since he flashed to the extent that he did in the spring.
And Tim, to your point, just getting a body, you basically said to Marcus Freeman when K99 got hurt last year, that day, are you going to look in the portal for a body because you need a player? And he's like, we will always look to improve our defense and offense. Man. And then the next 4 hours later, they had Chris. 4 hours later, they had Chris Smith.
they enhanced real quickly that time. A question from JackMac99. Who do you think will have more success in their first year on their new job, Tommy Reese or Jared Parker?
Are we measuring success by improvement from 2022 to 2023?
That's why it's a good question.
It's, got a pretty easy one for you if we're measuring by improvement. Jared Parker is going to have more improvement than the Tyler Buchner versus Bryce Young 41 points per game falling out of bed era in Alabama.
Yeah, this is going to be Jared Parker.
Yeah,
I don't even know what discussion you could have on it.
I don't either.
Success is relative here between an Alabama team and a Notre Dame team.
I mean, let's just say like Notre Dame averaged 40 points per game this year. What would we be saying about Jared Parker? Alabama averaging 40 points a game. What would they be saying about Tommy Reese? One would be for the Broyles Award. The other one would be getting fired. I mean, it's fired. Bill O'Brien got run out of town. The standards at Alabama, and I realize that's what Reese wanted to jump into, and full credit to him for doing that. But wow, that is a buzzsaw. And like Notre Dame is sort of still in like kind of a growth mode here where they're like trying to climb the mountain. Alabama's at the mountain wondering like, all right, can we go any higher?
And I think
Alabama is the mountain.
There, yeah. Jared Parker, I think he did the smart thing by not overhauling the offense. It's a continuation of what Tommy Reese did. And then you want to put your own touches on how you want the offense. Well, then you tweak it from there. But I think he made a decision, and Marcus Freeman made a decision that was in the best interest of the team and the entire offense in particular. And, you know, we don't know for a fact that Jared Parker has this other offense that he wants to run, you know, that varies so greatly from Tommy Reese. But I think he did the right thing. I think Notre Dame did the right thing. And then you insert a Sam Hartman into the equation and you got a chance to score a whole bunch of points this fall.
Right. Final question. Who do you think the captains will be this season? Oh, I lost the whole thing here.
This is from
It's Beast Texan, I think. Who do you think the team captains will be for the upcoming season? And also, since following Notre Dame, who would be your guys to be the all-time captains?
I don't know if you guys have this starts to be the time of year where we start considering questions like this. But if you think about this team, I don't know that there's an overabundance of captains that come to mind.
I can think of two immediate captains that I guarantee you JD Bertrand's a captain.
Yeah, and that's the most obvious one.
Really be surprised if Jack Kaiser's not a captain.
I agree with that.
What about Sam Hartman?
It's not really an ideal situation, but I think it'll work out just fine.
What about Zeke Carell?
That's a possibility as well.
And Chris Tyree would be a great captain, but he has to be a very involved player to be a great captain.
I would agree with that. Bertrand for sure. Kaiser maybe. I mean, I thought Kaiser was going to be a captain last year.
Yeah, I did too. And yeah.
Cam Hart injured too much. Cam Hart, no.
I think Joe Alt has the personality for it, even being a third year player. So that wouldn't, and if you're going to default to like best players are your captains, assuming they're like work their butts off, which I think Joe Alt does, then I think that'd be a pretty easy pick.
I got good news. They didn't lose a captain in the transfer portal.
Howard Cross might be a candidate. I mean, I think Hart.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Howard Cross tonight. Yeah.
And you got to have an offensive. This is Notre Dame. You got to have an offensive lineman as a captain. And Joe Hall, obviously, even though he's in his third year, it's almost undoubtedly his last year. So
I think you're right. I take that back. It'll be Joe Hall over Zeke Carell.
You're definitely getting into the, like, you don't want Joe Alt to have never been a captain when he's in the NFL. I think that's why Jalen Smith was a captain his junior year. It's like Notre Dame was not going to be like, why was it Jalen Smith a captain? Like, he was here for 3 years and like incredible. So
no, and Joe Alt might fall on that. Tim, to your point, I mean, I think certainly Zeke Carell, I mean, this is a guy that's gone through the ringer a little bit, you know, was frustrated that he couldn't get on the field earlier. Did some good things at center where they moved him to guard. It did not work out really well. I mean, and early last year, it didn't look like he was playing very well. And then the offensive line he's fought through a lot and he's a candidate, but I think Alt, Bertrand, Kaiser, those
Cross
are
is a good call. Cross is a very good call. Actually, he's a really respected player.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so too. And that's
Tyree's more of a great representative for when they need someone to talk after a loss post game or after, you know, something where Chris Tyree can handle himself so well and he'll be involved. He'll be involved. It's just that it's hard, I guess, if you don't, you're the fourth offensive option to be.
Yeah, and
captain.
I think, I mean, you also have to think in terms of diversity too in naming of the captain. So we'll see how that works out, but it's a good question because other than a couple three there, I don't know that any of them are real obvious choices. And the second part of the question, all time team captains, I'm going to draw the line for me.
What year do you want to start at?
I get to start in early 80s.
Okay. Well, I only start, I get to, I'll go first as I am the, well, I'm starting at 01. That's why I started. Okay. O'Malley, what year did you want to start?
I was going to start in 86, but is that allowed, or should I start in 08?
No, you can
start in 86. I'll start in 01 because I have a smaller pool to draw from.
Okay.
Brady Quinn, Harrison Smith, Manti Te'o, and then my fourth captain. It has to be somebody on offense. I think it's probably it's got to be an offensive lineman. So I guess I'll take Zach Martin.
That's a good one. Well, I'm starting with Tony Rice. Brady Quinn would be next on my list, but I can't have two quarterbacks as my captain, right? Or maybe they could have if they just kept Buckner. If they could have Buckner and Hartman captains, they all could have been fighting for jobs the whole year. But I'm going to go Tony Rice. Manti Te'o, because it was one of the most successful captaining efforts in the history of captaining, was Manti Te'o that year. And I'm going to go past Martin, as much as he was a great two-time captain, and do Drew Tranquil.
Yeah, I would have to, I mean, certainly from the BK era, I would have to have Tranquil in there. You know, I still think, I've said this and I'll stand by it, one of the greatest captains of all time in Notre Dame sports history is Pat Connaughton.
Yes.
And I would, you know, I mean, Dave Dorson was beloved and considered a great captain in the early 80s. Bob Crable was a two-timer. The trio in 88, the trio of Bolkar, Green, and Heck, Ned Bolkar, Mark Green, Andy Heck, was great. But when I go through all these years, the 1993 captains, I can't imagine a greater group of captains than Jeff Burris, Tim Ruddy, Aaron Taylor, and Bryant Young. That's the gold standard of captains in my lifetime. And I can't disagree with, you know, Te'o and Quinn and Harry Smith, Harrison Smith.
Smith had a hard job because he had a bunch of guys that were fractured between Kelly and Weiss. And that
he was
the
only captain.
Yeah. And the team. Yeah. He lost his co-captain in May. Or March, whatever it was. No, it was in the spring, obviously, because he didn't participate in the spring. So he lost his co-captain. He had a fractured team, and they lost their first two games in ignominious fashion, and they did not completely devolve. That's a hard. It's a little harder to do that than it is some other guys.
No, no doubt. I'd throw a vote in at least the Brian Kelly era from Mathias Farley too.
He has the best captain acceptance speech, if that counts.
Yes, yeah, that was great. Joe Schmidt. People don't like to hear that because he. Yeah, hurt and he wasn't.
Andy Bertrand. Sorry, I just threw it out there.
Yeah. Rocky Boyman is a guy, another guy that I would throw. But that quartet in '93, that's a pretty hard one to beat. But
all right, who do you have come speak? I have Mark Green and Drew Tranquil come out and speak to the media after everything happens.
They should have brought Drew Tranquil out after the Georgia game, but they only gave him to FIM. But it was still good.
Hey, McGlinchey had the hardest captaincy job, actually.
Oh, yeah. He was
16.
Great.
I mean, in 16, Mike McGlinchey, he was their lone rep coming out to talk to us half the time.
Oh, geez. Yeah, that was tough.
Austin Webster had a hard captaincy job for answering all
the questions. DeShawn Kizer as well. Yep. Brief.
We're going to wrap up with that. Next Monday is Memorial Day. We will not be doing a podcast on that day. We're scheduled for Tuesday. We may do something a little bit different. We're going to talk about it, but we anticipate coming back for a podcast next Tuesday, May 30th. And until then, we appreciate you listening and joining us on Irish Illustrated Insider.
Did you know that over 10 million pints of Guinness are consumed every single day? Dublin is the home of this very famous Irish stout, where it's brewed, stored and distributed worldwide. And if you're visiting Dublin, the Do Dublin Hop On, Hop Off bus tour is the perfect way to explore the city and its iconic landmarks, including the Guinness Storehouse. Book your tickets now at dodublin.ie/Irish Illustrated to secure your spot on the tour. But hurry. Spaces are filling up fast.